Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
Beth, you got a haircut.
I did. Do you like it?
It's short.
Your nice way of being like, I don't like it.
I wanted to say that.
So my mom and my sister liked it. And then my husband and my kids were like, nope, it's too short.
I love their honesty.
It's too short. I know. So for everybody listening, I went to my stylist and I said, okay, I want a short, blunt bob with bangs, which I'll admit that's a risk. Mm-hmm. But I honestly feel like once you've been bald, are you seriously like what could go wrong?
Right.
Is my question.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
You got hair.
I have hair.
Woohoo, that's a celebration.
It will grow. I know this for a fact now. So there wasn't that much risk involved in the decision making, and I changed my hair a lot anyway. But yeah, your opinion is noted and shared by some others. It's actually a good segue because we're going to be talking about like the ups and downs of treatment. So
yeah.
When you lost your hair, was it like, were you okay with it or were you upset?
Oh gosh, no. Losing my hair was probably the very first big roadblock that I knew. As soon as I heard I was going to have chemo, I was immediately, my brain went to, oh no, I'm going to lose my hair. And I think that was the hardest part of that was really kind of feeling like I was losing my identity. I've always been Sarah the redhead, mm-hmm. and long red hair, always cut my hair long. Like that's how people describe me. It's like, you know, being Jessie with the glasses or, you know, I felt like it was a part of who I was. And so I think losing my hair was a pretty big hit to take. Mm-hmm. Of course, now it's totally different. It actually came back in brown. So it's a lot different. Well, browner. It's got a red tint.
I was going to say, your hair's red. Do you use color?
No.
Sarah, your hair is still red.
Okay. Well, it is much browner than it was before.
I didn't know you before, so I couldn't say for certain, like, how much less red, but...
Thanks for helping my ego.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, no, now it's definitely like, I have hair, so like, what could go wrong?
Right.
Yeah.
No, I totally, I think that losing your hair is one of those things. So I don't know what you did, but my doctor had said, okay, it's probably going to start falling out after the third treatment. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. And so, you know, you start finding the hair on the pillow uh-huh. or in the shower and you're like, it's happening. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, do I get out in front of this and just, you know, shave my head? So I don't know how you did it, but I stair-stepped the approach. It's kind of like quitting smoking, right? Like mm-hmm. first you kind of like do it in steps to make yep. it easier.
So it helps your heart. Like,
right.
You're not like just, I don't know. Cold turkey is really difficult.
Cold turkey yeah. is really difficult. So first thing I did was I cut all my hair off into a pixie, which for me was not a big deal because I had done that before cancer. So to cut my hair down into a pixie was not a thing for me. But then, yeah, so I cut it into a pixie and maybe I got another week out of that before I was like, it's time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my husband was like, just let me know when you're ready and I'll take my clippers to you. And, you know, I remember like walking around the house, like doing things and thinking I should just rip the Band-Aid off and do it. Like I just needed to. So I went and found him and I'm like, I think it's time. And so we did, the kids were at school and we went into the bathroom and we tried to have fun with it. I mean, he gave me like a faux hawk. You know, because nice. When else are you going to do that? Right.
Right.
So yeah, he gave me like a faux hawk to begin with. And we took pictures and, you know, he did it for me. And the funny part that I remember out of it, I took a picture of us doing it. And if you look at the picture, what cracks me up about it is he and I look like twins after. Because he doesn't have hair. He has no hair.
Nice.
And then I had no hair. I mean, it was like ridiculous. We were joking that we should go as each other for Halloween.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
See, so you just make the best light out of the situation.
I mean, you kind of have to. There's no other, you know. And then, you know, once you get used to it, it's okay. So how about you? Like, how did you get rid of your hair?
Yeah. So it was summer. So the beginning of summer. And I remember I think it was my nurse navigator said, like, basically at the 14-day mark, you're going to start losing your hair. And, you know, I held on to hope for all of those 14 days. Maybe I'll be that 1% that doesn't. Maybe right. I will. And then it started almost like clockwork, like on the 14th day, brushing my hair, it was coming out in like clumps.
Ooh.
And we were driving around with our windows open. And it was literally just like flying off of my head. And I remember the very last day that I had hair, I actually took pictures because we were out picking strawberries with my family. And I had like little pigtails that I was just afraid that somebody was going to, like, my kids, we're going to grab them and just like pull all my hair off. So I think it was that night, my friend, who is actually now my babysitter and love her dearly, she told me from the get-go, like, hey, I'm going to come shave my head with you whenever you're ready. So she came over. It was like 9 o'clock at night, and my husband, we had to go buy clippers specially. And she came over and we shaved our head in the bathroom, and she's like, I'm so excited for my little kids to wake up in the morning and be like, Mom, where's your hair? I mean, she had long hair. But I guess, oh, and I didn't mention this. I did, you know, right before I started chemo, I cut my hair off. I had really long hair. Like, it was down to the bottom of my rib cage, and I had cut it off to donate it to Wigs for Kids because I knew I wanted to do that, and I had long hair. I didn't want it to go to waste.
And don't you think that there's something that is cathartic about finding purpose in something that you have to do that's difficult? I mean, it's like, okay, I have to do this hard thing, but I'm going to try to make something beautiful out of it.
Yes.
Yeah. My hair is so, you've seen it. Mm-hmm. You've seen it. It's fine. It lacks a certain essence that I wish it had. Nobody wants my hair is my point. So if I could have donated it, I would, but my hair was already too short. But
I was going to ask you, did you always have short hair?
Yeah, I've almost always had short hair.
Got it.
I am a 90-year-old trapped in a 40-year-old body. That's
so cute. You and your long sweater over there.
My cardigan.
In August.
My cardigan. Yes. It's chilly in here. So in our last episode, we talked about how we found out we had cancer, the importance of listening to your body, and then the choice that we each had to make on whether we wanted to get better or bitter. So even if you do decide you want to get better, you need to be prepared for the ups and downs that are inevitably going to come during the treatment process. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the highs and lows of cancer treatment and how to prepare yourself mentally so you don't crumble.
Exactly.
So before we continue, let's hear from one of our sponsors.
Do you ever get to the end of the month and wonder where all of your money goes? Like many others, you have made money mistakes. Are you living paycheck to paycheck and don't know what to do or how to save? Are you sleepless, worried about how to pay your bills and when to pay them? Do you need and want to gain control of your money but don't know who to ask for help? Well, there's hope. Meredith McVeil is a Dave Ramsey preferred money coach and can guide you from financial overwhelm to financial peace using a series of simple and proven steps. With her expert advice, you will learn how to cash flow your income, pay off credit card, medical, or student loan bills, and save and invest in your future. Additionally, Meredith is a two-time breast cancer survivor and deeply understands the overwhelming weight of the disease and the costs that go with it. Stop the endless worry and anxiety around your hard-earned money and call Meredith today. The first step is to schedule a phone call at ramseycoach.com/Meredith. That's ramseycoach.com/Meredith or call 314-724-1043. All right, so we're back. Let's talk about the emotional roller coaster that is cancer.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you had a lot of emotional highs and lows when you went through treatment. Like, tell me about that.
Yeah. There was, I think, something really big to remember. One, everybody's situation is unique. I, in particular, was postpartum. So imagine yourself postpartum, all the moms out there. You're already highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, luckily this wasn't my first, so I kind of had an idea about what to do with my kiddos. But now stack on top of that, everything that you have to do when you're trying to make decisions with cancer and treatment and the things that you're taking in that's all new and fresh. I think what was some of the biggest ups and downs was going from being told, you know, there's a potential, you know, given the hope, there's a potential this is stage zero. You know, and then finding out after my mastectomy, it's actually stage one and now you need treatment. So like the highs and lows of that. And then, you know, I know that you kind of went through the same thing, but the highs and lows of, am I going to do radiation? Like making the big decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And then really probably one of the biggest ups and downs for me was being postpartum and not being able to nurse my kiddo and breastfeed. So I had breastfed my first for 15 months. Mm-hmm. And knew that that was something that I couldn't wait. I think I even made the joke before I had cancer, like, oh, my next kid is going to nurse until she goes off to college, because I just didn't want to get my cycle back. And, you know, it felt so good. And I love the bonding. And, you know, then ironically, it got kind of ripped away. So I had to deal with that. And
yeah,
you have to process your emotions with that. And I'll never forget being in actually in the office of the family practitioner who sent me off for my first oncology appointment. She handed me a box of tissues and was like, you have to process this.
Hmm.
And was like, basically just gave me the space to cry it out. And it was,
that's interesting. I think amazing. Like when I hear that, it just, it always reinforces the fact that it's not just about the cancer. It's mm-hmm. everything else that it impacts in your life. And mm-hmm. so for you, it was the trauma of losing your hair and then finding out that something you had been looking forward to, bonding with your child, you know, in that way was not going to necessarily be possible anymore. And it's just, and did you feel like that was harder for you to come to terms with than the cancer?
Yeah, because you want to put blame on something like, oh, like I want this so bad and I'm going to blame this cancer. Oh, this is taken away from me. And you just get angry because it's completely out of your control.
And do you think people understand that? Or do you think they think you should be worried about saving your life and nothing else? Like everything else is inconsequential. Like, you know,
yeah.
Do you think people minimize those quality of life issues that are related to a cancer diagnosis?
Totally. Totally.
I do too. I feel
and
like
I don't think that that's even just specific to cancer. Mm-hmm. I think that that's lots of different things. So, you know, if you get diagnosed with diabetes or, you know, another health, an autoimmune disorder, a lot of times you put your quality of life and the things that were important to you kind of on the back burner for now you're saving your life or now you're fixing this or mm-hmm. now you have to take this medication. Like mm-hmm. it just kind of gets pushed down and you have to confront those feelings.
Yeah, I agree. I do think you have to kind of take each day on its own,
mm-hmm.
because I do feel like if you look too far ahead, you're going to get overwhelmed and you're going to kind of freak out, which is natural. I think it's really important to just take each day as it comes and address the feelings and the news that day. I mean,
correct.
I don't know if you agree with that or not, but that's how I got through. It's just focusing on the day at hand, which as a society, I feel like it's so hard to live in the moment, to be mm-hmm. present anyway. But cancer is pretty good at making you do that.
Mm-hmm. It snaps you back to reality
right?
pretty fast.
I mean, it wasn't that hard of a transition for me to do that. It was literally too overwhelming to think too much in the future to where I just focused on the day at hand and that seemed manageable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I hear you.
What were your biggest ups and downs whenever you got diagnosed and then kind of going through treatment?
I mean, I felt like there was quite a bit of bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
It was like my doctors would say things like, we don't think you need radiation. And then I'd get a lift from that. Like, oh, finally, a piece yeah. of news, like good news. And then the very next appointment, all of a sudden it was, well, your cancer exhibits this specific characteristic. So this makes you more susceptible to reoccurrence. Now we want you to have radiation. Or they would say the mastectomy went well, but then the pathology report would come back and they didn't get enough. They didn't get clean margins around one of the tumors, which meant there were potentially cancer cells left behind. And so it was just those kind of things, which made it kind of hard to find your footing and to stay kind of even. It was just these extreme ups and downs. And when I went through treatment, I kind of joked about it, that I felt like one of those inflatable clowns that you punch and they like, and they like fall back and mm-hmm. then they pop back up. I mean, mm-hmm. that's how I felt, because I'm a pretty resilient person. I'm a pretty strong person. So I feel like I'd take the punch and then I'd have to process it
mm-hmm.
and then I'd come back up, you know, for round two.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's super, super stressful. And I think sometimes providers and others in healthcare, they become desensitized to how those kind of things affect a patient, how they hear them, what that feels like to be constantly getting news that doesn't sound great. It's not necessarily fair, but it definitely made me attribute the stress from my cancer diagnosis to the doctors rather than the actual diagnosis, which is, I think is interesting, yeah. You know, because they're the bearer of bad news, right? Like,
yeah.
don't shoot the messenger.
Sure. So I guess my question for you is, what did you find helpful for bringing you back up?
I mean, the thing that I hated to do, but that was the most beneficial for me was to just, like you said, it's exactly what that doctor told you. You have to process how you feel and you have to admit how you feel. Mm. So I was the queen of emotional avoidance. And so I would always kind of push things to the side or just barrel through them and be like, I'm going to just power through this. I'm strong. But I realized in this circumstance that wasn't going to work. And so I really had to come to grips with the fact that every time I got hit with news that upset me, I had to acknowledge the fact and kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, honor the feeling and say, and legitimize it. Like, this is, of course you feel this way. It's almost as like being nice to yourself, you know, like it's, of course you feel this way that you just got this news. Who, you know, who wouldn't feel this way? It's okay that you feel this way. And it's okay that you're sad and it's okay that you're scared and this is expected, you know, but then I would also kind of talk myself out of my own funk. I would say, you know what though? What did you expect? Did you think life wasn't going to hand you curveballs? Did you think you were going to go through your entire life without adversity or some sort of setback? No, I guess not. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're in that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you going to respond? And so it's funny because I would dig myself in the hole and then I would kind of dig myself back out.
It's funny because I see parallels all the time. Like, you know, it's just all a matter of perspective. For cancer, it just seems, it does always seem like, but these are potentially life or death situations, but our body reacts the exact same way. And the same tools are effective in, you know, your day not going right. Like you getting a flat tire on the way to work. Like, you know, our body is always going to need the same things. Okay. You just need to come back to
like that stress response.
Yeah. The stress response. You need to come back to what works for you and what kind of gives you that peace.
But don't you feel like, I mean, I felt like, you know, that would have been really helpful to have somebody kind of educate me on the natural stress responses when you get a serious diagnosis. Like, this is how your body is going to respond chemically. And to your point, these are the stress responses we all have in day-to-day life, but this is obviously a bigger deal. Mm-hmm. And these are the ways that you can kind of mitigate that stress response. You know, I almost feel like if I had known that it was normal and to expect those emotions, that it would have helped me kind of navigate those waters better instead of me floundering around and trying to figure it out myself. I mean, I think that's why we're doing this podcast now is to try to maybe help somebody figure these things out sooner than you and I did.
Normalize that there's going to be ups and downs and normalize feelings, like normalize that it's not beautiful pink ribbons and people running and cheering for you. Like that is obviously the fun part, you know, whatever, but it's not, breast cancer is not always going to be, you know, beautiful pink ribbon.
Well, yeah, I was definitely not feeling that vibe when I was going through treatment.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, okay. Before we move on, guess what time it is?
Boobs in the news.
It's time for Boobs in the news. Okay, so in case you missed our first podcast, Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets from real people or ridiculous news stories. So let's do that now.
All right.
Boobs in the news. Boobs in the news. Boobs in the news.
So I've read this and you haven't. I just thought it was kind of funny.
You're going to get an authentic response right here.
Okay. So this comes out of Louisville, Kentucky, right? And the title of this says, "Don't lick your fingers."
Oh boy.
Okay. It says, "That's what Kentucky Fried Chicken signaled to customers Monday as the company suspended its, quote, its finger licking good tagline after 64 years, deeming it, quote, the most inappropriate slogan for 2020. Amid the coronavirus pandemic. The suspension will affect the slogan's use in global advertising for a little while," the company said in a statement.
Oh, poor KFC.
But I think is funny about this is that they think they have to explain. Like, I think it's funny they think they have to suspend it because there's real danger. There's real danger in somebody licking their fingers and getting coronavirus. Like, that's the culture we live in now is that they had to suspend something they've been doing for 64 years. Mm-hmm. Because they're worried that somebody's...
The finger licking is on pause.
Right. We can't let you lick your fingers. No. We can't be responsible for what might happen.
So, oh, it's a different world.
Oh my gosh. It was so... I thought that was funny.
It is pretty funny.
So I don't know if that, I don't know if they're the boob or if the people they're speaking to, I think the people they're speaking to, the people that they're worried about, those are the boobs. What do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. It's a chicken before the egg.
No, know. You didn't. You did not.
Just, I just said that.
You totally did.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
All right, we are back. So we have now talked about some of the lows that we experienced in treatment. But let's talk about some things we had built up in our heads that didn't go quite as bad as we had expected.
Yeah. Okay. So before we like dive into this, can we talk about Dr. Google? Because because you mentioned in our first episode that you found yourself crying and staying up all night after you Googled all the possible side effects from your chemo drugs. And that wasn't your experience at all, was it?
No, not at all. I felt this in a couple of different instances throughout my treatment, but I not only did I consult Dr. Google, but there are many resources on Facebook and social media. But
Can we put a, like a little disclaimer out there that this is why you don't do this?
Yes, this is why. Yes. So okay. I built up the bad scenarios in my head quite a lot, which what I heard later on down my road is in counseling was that is called
catastrophizing.
That's the long word.
Can you tell you and I have done therapy? We both know clearly. We know all the terms.
So catastrophizing, you know, it's the same thing as, you know, bringing home your new baby and laying them down and like, you know, thinking about, oh my gosh, that blanket's too close. Like they could put it over their face or like, you know, just basically coming up with all the bad things that could happen. So that's catastrophizing. So me Googling and me searching out social media for all the things that could go wrong in the situation was me preparing for catastrophe so that I could set up my expectations. And then was always in every situation pleasantly surprised when things went so much better. So I had these images of myself being horribly bedstricken for days and not being able to eat anything and just throwing up all the time. And in reality, I think I was waiting for the foot to drop every time I got home from each chemo treatment. I had four and then it never did. And then, you know, I was all done. I'm like, oh, really? That actually wasn't quite so bad. And I'm not down. I mean, obviously there are some women that have some awful experiences with chemo and just, I think just normalizing the effects that everybody is going to experience it differently.
Yeah, I think that's true. Because I mean, you had four rounds of chemo. This is sad. I don't even know how many I had. I don't know if 20 is the right word. I mean, I had a lot. I had like four of the AC and then I think, I don't know. It was up there.
Uh-huh.
It was like 12 weeks of something else. And then the AC.
This is also really, for our listeners, if you are like just starting your journey, this is also really good to remember. It was a lovely reminder just yesterday. I was texting with somebody who is my mentee and she had something that was going on with her reconstruction. She's a couple weeks out from her reconstruction surgery. And, you know, I was thinking like, gosh, I do remember that. Like, I remember how uncomfortable that was. But I think what is cool about what you just demonstrated there is that when you're in the moment, it seems like I will never forget any part of this. But it's like childbirth. Like
it is.
Once you're out from it, it's like, oh, that sucked when I was in it. But
you know what's really indicative of that is when we talk to like our 20-year survivors.
Yeah.
Because their biggest worry is like whether or not they're going to be able to remember every piece of somebody's journey just starting out to like support them, because that's how far removed they are from it. That's not the primary focus of their lives anymore. So to piggyback on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right. And everybody's experience is going to be different. And I had some chemo treatments that were not fun. But I think that there were, to your point, other parts of treatment that other people had said, oh, watch out for this. And then that wasn't my experience at all.
Yeah.
You know, even just little things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I think it's just being open to the experience and knowing that, you know, what's going to come of it is going to come of it. And you're doing what you can to survive in that moment. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what do we want people to know that are listening right now regarding the ups and downs of treatment?
I mean, I think the biggest ups and downs to realize is to normalize that those are going to happen. Just like in normal life, even outside of treatment, ups and downs happen. Even after treatment, ups and downs are going to happen. You confronting those feelings and naming them for what they are and then putting them aside, not stuffing them down to wait for them to all bubble up and bubble over like a pot of water. Mm-hmm. But to see them, name them, feel them, mm-hmm. and then come back.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I basically feel the same way that you do. I think that it's just going in with realistic expectations and knowing that cancer, like life, is not linear, but rather just ups and downs. And so if you go into it knowing that, then, you know, to your point, there's benefits and there's negatives to being overly optimistic or overly pessimistic. So I think it's just going in with realistic expectations and understanding that you are going to have those ups and downs, and but then equipping yourself emotionally to handle those, to have a game plan for what am I going to do when I hear something that upsets me? You know, how am I going to acknowledge it? How am I going to move past it? That's something that I really wish people would have told me when I was diagnosed, that cancer is often just as much an emotional battle as a physical one. And so, 100%. Yeah. And so if you can kind of acknowledge that fact and then put coping strategies in place that are healthy for you, I think that would be really good. So obviously being diagnosed with cancer is super stressful, and hopefully today's show did something to prepare you for the ups and downs of treatment and to encourage you that your feelings have been shared by literally every single cancer patient ever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So simply having realistic expectations will help you weather those situations so you won't be surprised. And secondly,
Don't Google.
Don't do it. Yeah. My husband had a friend who was an oncologist at Mass General. And the first thing she said to me when I told her about my diagnosis was, Beth, like, whatever you do, do not Google. So
one of my chemo drugs, there was a percentage chance. And of course they don't tell you the percentage chance when you Google, but there was a chance that my hair wouldn't come back. And when I saw that, I was like, my life is going to be different forever right now when just knowing that I'm getting this chemo drug. So
yeah. So. Yeah. Don't go down that road. Yeah. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And mm-hmm. so we'll talk more about that, but yeah, do not Google. So before we kind of wrap up, let's go to our second sponsor. We all want to stay safe and stay healthy during the pandemic. RX Outreach can help. RX Outreach is the nation's largest nonprofit mail order pharmacy, and they have helped their patients save over $662 million in medication costs. They keep it simple so you don't need to worry about coupons or promo codes. They even offer free standard shipping. I love that each bottle cap has their motto, honoring God by serving others, on it. Check out their website to see their amazing prices, especially if you know someone with an allergy. They offer 2-pack epinephrine auto-injectors for $30. RxOutreach.org. Earlier in the broadcast, I said my husband's friend, who was an oncologist at Mass General, gave me 2 pieces of advice. The first was not to Google, and the second was to find a provider that I liked and didn't mind being tethered to for like the next 10 years.
Next time, we'll be discussing finding the right provider for you.
All right, until next time, guys.